Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever the hell you're at in the world. Welcome back to another episode of the Forest Walker Podcast. This episode is once again sponsored by Free the Llama, versatile apparel for the adventure in all of us. Also, just dropped flip-flops, say that 10 times fast. Anyways, just drop those on the Free the Llama website, that's freethellama.org or .com, because it's versatile and you can do whatever the hell you want. Anyways, on today's episode, we have my good friend Dawson Diatre, who is a volunteer firefighter, a freaking athlete, cross-country skier. You are a para-educator still, or ex-para-educator? Have you resigned yet?
I will soon.
You will soon?
Okay. Just got that email I need to respond, actually.
Oh, dang. Anyways, teacher, future educator. He is the future of your children. So let's see what he has to say.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Pretty awesome.
That's good. You just had a pretty sick weekend, huh?
I did.
Where'd you guys go to?
We traveled to Bend, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Spent the weekend skiing alongside the U.S. cross-country ski team.
Oh, dang.
Actually.
It was the national ski team? Really? I actually didn't know that. I thought they were just randomly there.
What do you think
there.
Jesse Diggins skis for?
I don't know these people. So
that's the funny part. There were all these people. Like, I know these people are probably famous, but I have no idea who they are. Other than like Jesse Diggins, Sophie Caldwell, and Sadie Bjornsson.
Yeah, I only know one of those people, and that's Jesse Diggins, because Faith talks about her all the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was awesome though.
Nice. Did you guys got to ski on snow too, right?
Yep. There's actually still a pretty good bit of snow up there. The first day we skied was beautiful. Like, it was sunny.
Mm-hmm.
We're going out in t-shirts and like
dang.
Base layer.
Sports bras?
No, it's actually didn't come.
Oh, okay. That's good. Keep a PG.
Yeah. The second day it kind of was more gloomy. Mm-hmm. Third day it rained on us a little bit and then warmed up towards the afternoon.
Cool.
But yeah, it was still some awesome skiing. It's good to be back on snow.
Nice.
This early in the season.
So you didn't just, like, meet the athletes. You got to ski with them.
It's more like they were skiing on the same trails. I mean, there are a lot of trails there. But most of us stayed pretty close. So, I mean, you, like, just see them going around a bunch. Some of the other kids did, like, back at the lodge. They met with a bunch of the skiers there and got their stuff signed and took pictures and all that crap, but
solid.
I was out training when they were doing that, so I didn't get to do that.
Damn,
but I
dude.
Don't really care.
Pursuing health instead of publicity.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, it was interesting. It kind of made me realize that, like, I don't really care.
You didn't get
anybody's autograph. I mean, it'd be cool to, like, meet someone famous and shake hands with them.
But you're not going to build a relationship with them or anything, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what would be awesome, is if you had, like, the opportunity to have a relationship with them.
Yeah.
But since you don't, it's like, okay, cool.
Whatever.
Can I just say I met you? Like,
take a selfie, cool, I don't need you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everybody else, especially Faith, is, like, flipping out about Jesse Diggins and all these other people and, like, getting stuff signed. What are they going to sign? And I'm like, cool, I get to see her. Got to see her ski.
Oh, cute athlete. All right, cool. She's not going to talk to me. Out of my league. Whatever.
Not for Buster. Buster doesn't think she's out of his league.
Oh, was he going for it?
Dude, he has such a huge crush on her.
Really?
It's hilarious.
Dang, was he just like, was he flirting with her? Or?
I mean, they didn't interact very much. It was more all the stuff he said in the van that was like.
Oh, all right.
That's funny.
Sliding into her DMs.
Now Silas is going around saying, ooh, it's a Jesse. Okay, maybe
what?
Not in that voice. That's just one of the things Buster and Gabe would say. They're like, ooh, it's a Jesse.
Oh, like when they see
and I think
they
made
or...
like a TikTok
oh.
about it or something.
All right. TikTok, that sucks. Cool. Have you actually downloaded that app?
No.
Oh. I Never. Downloaded it for like a day and scrolled through it, and it was possibly like the worst 45 minutes of my life.
Oof, 45 minutes?
I had nothing else to do, you know?
Cool.
I was scrolling through it. I think I've, like, tainted myself because I've watched too much comedy, so I'm just like, it's not funny. It's...
Yeah.
You deep-throated banana? Cool, good for you.
I do that all the time. And other things.
Yeah.
See this bottle?
Stop. So bad. Oh, man. No, so who was the person that signed the Free the Llama hat?
Yeah, so there's the guy who was kind of the head or guest coach for the camp, because it was technically a camp with NBSCF, was Andy Newell, who Pierre introduced him as the most successful and famous male cross-country skier.
Wow.
So I never heard of him.
That's a lot coming from Pierre.
But, yeah.
Freaking
and,
French, actually.
He was, like, he knows his shit. It was cool because, like, a lot of the stuff he had us do is stuff Pierre's had us do, too. So it was kind of, like, reinforcing that and being like, cool, Pierre's on the right track, too. But then he's also a bit more fit than Pierre.
Yeah.
No offense, because he skis all the time.
He's not skiing with little kids. He's skiing with other
Yeah, so I'm not exactly
athletes.
Sure, but I'm pretty sure he is kind of, like, one of the coaches for the U.S. ski team.
Mm.
He does coach, like, all the REG camps, which is, like, the you know, the junior skiers who do really well at junior nationals.
Oh.
They get to go to summer camps just for them because they're so awesome.
Fuck those kids. No.
Yeah, so he's had a lot of experience skiing. He's really good at it, and he's had a lot of experience coaching. Mm-hmm. And, like, we didn't have a whole lot of time of instruction with him each time because, like, when we were out on snow, we, like, rotated through stations. We'd have, like, 15 minutes to go over, like, a V1 technique and just have us do some drills. But, like, each one of those stations, I was lucky because I was the last group to go through, so he kind of just followed us through all the stations and got to hear stuff for all of them instead of the other coaches. But, like, just in those 15 minutes, like, he would always say at least one thing, technically, that I was like, wow, I haven't really thought about that before, or that's super helpful. And then in the drill, I was able to apply it and think about it and be like, dang, I'm actually learning stuff from this, despite, like, it not being a lot of time.
Yeah.
So it was really helpful, technique-wise,
that's
all the sessions we had out there.
That's a really unique skill for people to have when they can convey lessons and information in a short period of time.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah, and he's kind of comparing to Pierre a little bit. I mean, he also is a native English speaker, so it's just another way to come at it with, like, kind of teaching the same concepts, but in different ways, like, relating it in different ways, so you get, like, reinforcements, but also, like, oh, that's what he was talking about. Just
that makes more sense
ways.
Now, yeah.
So it was really cool.
That's cool.
We did, like, one of the dry land things was he went over bounding, which was...
And bounding is taking ski poles and running with them, right?
Well, so... you can take poles and you can walk with them. And that's just, like, hiking or whatever.
Lame.
You can take poles and you can Nordic walk with them, which is kind of like trying to mimic classic skiing technique as you walk. That's one of the things I talked to Pierre about afterwards, and he was like, yeah, I'm not really a fan of that, which is why we haven't done it a lot. But then bounding is more just you have the poles and you're really focusing on a really minimum amount of time spent on the ground with each
So, like,
stride.
Distance between strides?
Not so much distance. It's just, like, you're minimizing the time on the ground. So, it's, like, a down, and then you bounce immediately to the other foot as you're going. And just...
It's like a rabbit, like, bing,
Actually,
bing,
yes, he did.
Bing.
One of the... So, like, that was kind of the end result, is we were bounding, and there was a little course we did where we kind of, like, did some Nordic walking, and then some bounding around a big loop. And that was kind of the end thing. But before that, he spent, like, at least half an hour just doing, like, stretches and then warm-up drills and, like, all stuff that was really helpful in talking about kind of the body mechanics of it. Mm-hmm. And one of those things was, like, he said, have you ever seen, like, a rabbit's leg or foot, and, like, you see how fast they go, and it's because of the mechanics of their leg, how it's, like, you've got this flat and then their leg comes out and then this way.
Does like a weird, yeah,
like an inverted knee. Like a Z shape or whatever, and that allows you to have that really quick amount of time on the ground and get a lot of power out of it. Mm-hmm. And he demonstrated just by, like, having it standing up, and then you kind of put your leg behind you, and lay, like, bring it up and down and see, like, how quickly you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you put some flexion into your ankle, and then just bounce it up and down there, like, you can feel how much faster that is and how much more efficient.
Huh.
And I was like, wow, okay. And then he had drills to go with that. Spent a lot of time like breaking down all these little things and then went into the actual exercise part of it.
Oh.
It was super cool.
That's really in-depth thing.
Yep. So like, yes, he signed the Free the Llama hat that Liam was wearing.
That's cool. Got to do a photo shoot with him. All right.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Plain Valley Nordic Team wasn't the only ski team that was there with them, was it? It was, what teams were there?
So it was hosted, I guess, by MBSEF.
Okay.
Just the main Bend team.
Mount Bachelor Ski Education.
Project. Bend Endurance Academy, the other Bend team was there. I think I only saw them yesterday, so Monday while we were skiing. And then we brought two skiers from Leavenworth, and there were another two skiers from Leavenworth there. And then, let's see. I don't think there were really any Met House skiers other than Novi, but it's because she's on this U.S. ski team. Momentum. So Zach brought their van with a couple of Momentum Northwest kids. And then Jeff brought Rue and Garrett from
Ellensburg. Nice. That's cool.
So yeah, it was a lot of familiar faces for sure.
That's good.
That's super cool.
That is nice. And so that your ski season just started. That was like the first. Did you have a training day before that?
We had practice on Wednesday, and then we left for the camp on Friday.
Oh, okay. All right.
So yeah, that's, we're literally just jumping into the season.
Did you do any training during the off season?
Slept a lot.
All right, rest and recovery.
I mean, yeah. It's kind of like, I can bring him out. I went on a run with Josiah.
All right.
For like an hour and a half. I did Firefighter Challenge, which was a 10K right. run.
Yeah, that's...
And dang. Then I did the Sunflower Relay, which is about another 10K run. And I managed to improve my time from that one, or from the Firefighter Challenge to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was pretty much all I did.
And during the off season, like, especially, like, your legs, were you able to keep your legs in shape? Because that's something I struggle with. Like, look at these things. I got old man legs, all right? And I've been doing leg days, like, frequently. Like,
I didn't pay attention to my legs. They feel strong.
Oh, okay.
Still, I mean,
you're just...
I mean, running is more aerobic anyway.
Naturally.
Definitely, like, that first strength session, I was sore.
Mm-hmm.
For, like, 3 days afterwards. Pretty bad. But I'm actually surprised. Like, logged like 10 or more hours this last weekend at the camp.
Wow.
But I am like barely feeling it as far as soreness in the muscles.
Because it was just consistent.
Strength session. I don't know. And like there were like even just yesterday skiing, like it was definitely as I was skiing, I could feel like, ooh, okay, I'm using those muscles. I've been using them for a while. It kind of hurt.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's nice not to be sore now.
Nice. That's cool. So,
yeah, bro.
Is there anything else interesting about that camp? Or is that pretty much it?
Woo! Well, the ski team. And. Well, it was kind of a. It was a first in the team dynamics, because obviously you weren't there.
Yeah.
Gabe wasn't there.
Oh, the entire, like, average age went down by, like, 5 years.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, first of all, it was the biggest, like, the most amount of triple people we've brought the farthest away from plane on a
triple.
Yep, tree people.
Tree people.
So we had, it was 17 or 18 kids total.
Mm-hmm.
Brought two vans and a truck. All the way down there. And then, yeah, like, I was the oldest. Faith was next oldest. And then it was, like, Leanne. And so we had... It was interesting. We ended up naturally splitting up between the vans. We had, like, kind of the original... Or at least the last year's senior race team in one van. And then all the newcomers in the other van. Which, like, just... We weren't even thinking about it. It was just kind of worked
just
out
just natural segregation.
Yeah. So it was, like, all the girls and Easton and Micah... We're together, and then everybody else is in the other van.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely a first having that dynamic, having all those younger kids there who haven't necessarily traveled or been a part of our kind of camps and races.
So are you kind of having to fall into more of a coaching role since you're the oldest right now on the team?
I probably should be. But I'm not. I definitely spent a lot of time laying in bed and reading or sleeping instead of managing the other kids.
Just like you're doing on the off season.
Didn't want to deal with them. Yeah, it's gonna take a little bit of time to get them used to the.
There's the future for the your team children, racing people. And he doesn't want to deal with them.
Yeah,
that's funny. What else have you been up to?
Play a lot of video games now.
Yeah.
Just downloaded like 3 more today.
You play video games. What do you have a gaming laptop?
Kind of. When I got it for school. Okay. But it was also like, you know, I want to be able to play games on it. So it's like ridiculously big and does have an NVIDIA like graphics processor and an i7 core. But so it works really well for playing games that you just download and play, like the early Assassin's Creed or I played Shadow of Mordor recently. Like those games are just contained. But I started playing PUBG recently with friends and because it's online servers, it's really tough to play because of the drop in frame rates whenever you're around people who are shooting you. And we also, like, I have a bunch of friends who are playing it, so we're using Discord to talk at the same time and just have an overlay, so I have that open as well, and that's running, and that slows things down even more. So it doesn't work great for that, but it does run other games pretty well, which is nice.
So PUBG is a shooter?
It's a first-person shooter, battle royale style.
You don't own a real gun, do you?
I do not yet. Huh. I'll get one eventually.
Yeah.
But I don't have the money right now.
And the gun laws are kind of making it more difficult for you to get what you want, right?
I mean, I probably wouldn't get an AR anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be cool to have, like, a semi-automatic, 22. That'd be pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like, I'd rather get a bolt-action rifle than a semi-automatic one or...
an assault rifle. Yeah. That's cool.
And a handgun eventually.
Huh?
And a handgun eventually.
Handgun, yeah.
Yeah.
I
like that little one.
So you're pro-choice then? That's a different conversation.
You're pro gun. Go to that if you want.
Pro gun ownership.
In a broad sense, yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. And actually, in both of those conversations/arguments, what I think about a lot is something that Andrew Campbell once said, more or less paraphrased, that had to do with, I think he was talking about more personally in our lives, kind of addressing symptoms rather than the problem. So we look at kind of some bad behavior that we're doing or whatever, and then you try to like fix that, but you never actually think about or try to fix the underlying problem that's causing that symptom. And I like to apply that to kind of a lot of the legislation that we're doing in America right now, or people are trying to do or push, and that, like, we have a lot of bad things going on.
Yeah.
And people are trying to get rid of them as much as they can by legislating the hell out of them.
Mm-hmm.
But really, all that does is, I mean, I would argue it doesn't really get rid of the problem. But at least to some degree, it's getting rid of the symptom.
It's decreasing the...
But it's never going to go away completely because you still have the underlying problem. So
in what
so
example?
In the example of guns, it'd be like... you can take away guns, but people are still going to find ways to kill each other.
Yeah.
Like, that's an underlying problem. Sometimes it makes it easier, sometimes it doesn't.
but it's still like that underlying problem is with the person, with the culture, not with the gun itself. With abortion, I read a really good article a couple days ago that was kind of talking about how, like, you can make abortion illegal and punish the women who are getting the abortions, or you can try to change the culture that is leading women to this decision to have an abortion. The rape culture, the not having good sex education or contraception, like all these different things that are leading to women having to face this choice. Do I try to raise this kid or do I not? And people are focusing in on the, you can't do that, you can't kill an unborn child and all this. And it's like, yes, abortion is a terrible thing. I wish it would never happen. But so is punishing women for making that.
For doing this. Especially, what, 99 years in prison? Is that what Alabama just did?
I don't even know, but it's... Definitely what I read is the penalty for getting an abortion is much worse than the penalty for raping someone.
Yeah.
Which is retarded.
Yeah, that's...
That is...
an offensive word, and you shouldn't use that word. But
ridiculous.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's dumb. Yeah. But how do you think you would change that culture, the rape culture, how would you change the mindset of males that walk around thinking it's okay to completely objectify women and think women are solely there for the purpose of them to fuck? How would you change that?
I would start by not raising my kids that way. By focusing on the people close around me and trying to just raise them, encourage them in a way that teaches them, shows them that is not okay.
People should be respected because they're human.
Yeah.
But how do you get other places in our country and other places in the world to be able to adopt that same principle that you would raise your kids with and raise their kids with that? Like, how would society make that change?
I don't know, but...
Yeah, it's difficult.
I would say that in large part, it could come around to the education system. Because in a lot of cases, more or less, that is raising people's children. And that is teaching them what to think and how to think. And it's not just the things they're taught explicitly in school, but the things that are taught implicitly by the people and interactions around them, kind of outside of the classroom, just in the school, the way people behave.
At recess and in the halls, and
So I would.
Which then also reflects how they're raised at home in their home life, like how
in a lot
their
of cases,
their
yeah.
friends' home life is. Because, like, if their friend's dad beats their mom, they think that's okay, then that gets passed on to their five friends, and then it's like a ripple effect.
Yeah.
If the teacher isn't there to correct.
Yeah. So I would...
put more effort into...
I would say that a reform in the education system could go a long ways towards helping to fix that problem. Because ultimately, like, that is when we are most malleable. That's when things kind of have or impact us easily and influence a lot of the rest of our lives. And right now, a lot of the stuff that they're learning there is not great. And that's leading to a lot of the culture that we see around us. There's definitely lots of other aspects to it, whether it's media or politics and all these different things, but I think that'd be a good place to start.
That's a good point. I like that. you mentioned sex education a second ago. I know a lot of people who are pro-life are also kind of rooting for a abstinence-only sex education program. Because I know a lot of the pro-life people are coming from a Christian, a very conservative Christian set of values.
Yeah.
And not all of them, obviously, but there's a large group of them.
Yeah.
And they go for an abstinence-only sex education program. Do you think that is kind of the educational reform you were just talking about? Like, would that be the answer?
Well, going back to that article that I read earlier,
mm-hmm.
And I agreed in large part with it, but one of the things he said was, no matter how hard you try, you are not going to be able to keep people from having sex.
People like having sex.
It's just not going to happen. You can restrict and legislate the hell out of it. It's still going to happen. People are going to suffer the consequences for it.
Yeah.
Pretty much no matter what. So I don't think...
Because it is a natural thing. Like, the answer.
Yeah.
I don't understand how that can be so stigmatized in some places and in some cultures when it's a primal natural thing that we do to carry on our genetic lineage. Like, it's...
Dang.
That was loud.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So how would you approach sex education to change the mindset of the next generation to decrease rape culture?
Oh boy. No pressure.
That's a hard question.
Yeah.
You don't have to answer it if you don't want to. I'm just curious what you're...
I think we just need to do a better job of helping kids realize the choice that they have there,
mm-hmm.
and the consequences of that choice. So you have, I mean, obviously, if you're a more conservative Christian background, that choice has, say, religious consequences.
Yeah.
Choose to have sex with someone outside of marriage. One, all your Christian conservative friends are probably going to look down on you, the church as a whole. You might feel guilty about it yourself.
Yeah.
There's consequences there. There's obviously natural consequences of if you don't...
Protect.
If you don't use protection, then you might have to face that choice of
raise
abortion or raise a child.
Yeah.
But I mean, just helping them to realize, like, you have this choice. Make sure that you try to really think about your decision before you make it. One, to hopefully make sure it's someone you care about.
Yeah.
Well,
just teach them to put thought into their decisions. Like you were saying earlier, teach kids to think for themselves, not...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really, overall, just to recognize I guess what the consequences are physically, having to raise a child, emotionally, being connected to another person like that, knowing what's available,
mm-hmm.
contraception, and just knowing how to not accidentally create a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. It doesn't help that I was homeschooled in a Christian conservative home, and so I don't even know what the health class and
in middle school modern schools look like. Yeah.
What it actually exists as now, but it does seem pretty obvious that it's not
doing its job
well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure in some cases it is already kind of a, this is something you just shouldn't do, or shouldn't do till you're older, rather than talking about, if you do, here's what you should keep in mind.
Yeah.
So you don't make those mistakes.
Hmm. So you are a Christian yourself. You are a God-fearing man.
Yeah.
All right, that was a long pause.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
Oh, all right. What's... That sounds interesting. We're going to dive more into that after the break.
Oh, sweet.
All right, so... It's complicated. What is complicated about it? Mm-hmm. The whole Christianity thing. If you feel comfortable talking about that.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
This isn't something I've thought about in a while.
Yeah. Well, I know we've had some conversations about it previously, but it hasn't been for, like, a while. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a conversation that I had with myself. Maybe, like, 2 months ago?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just over a course of a couple months up to that point. I haven't thought about it for a while. Yeah, but I'm definitely... My beliefs are definitely evolving and changing from what they were when I was 16.
Yeah.
I would say that I do believe that there is a God who wants to have personal relationships with us.
With every individual?
And I would say that because I have, in the past, experienced that for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I have heard about it from a lot of other people who I trust and respect.
Mm.
But kind of what I've come to realize and decide is that it, at least for me, that is definitely more of a personal thing. So where I would stray a bit more from, say, typical Christianity or saying that I'm a Christian,
mm-hmm.
Is kind of all the a lot of the things and stigmas that go along with that word and everything that's all the history of Christianity, for one. So I don't, so that's kind of where my beliefs are set, but at the same time, kind of where I'm at now, like, I have that belief, but I don't, actively have a growing relationship with that God.
Okay.
That I believe in.
Is that because that's not something you're actively pursuing, or is it just...
Yeah. Yeah, hmm. That's something that... Yeah, like I said, I have experienced that.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, having a relationship with someone takes a lot of work. Something I realized just here on Earth. Like, I had my best friend lived in Plain when we grew up.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah, we've known each other since we were babies and grew up together and have a really good relationship. But then he moved off to college, and even though it's just in Kino Island, it's like, what, 3 hours away?
Yeah.
Just not having that face-to-face contact, like, that relationship has dwindled a lot.
It weakens its structure, for sure.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's great when we're able to get back together and hang out, but at the same time, there's still that kind of gap that I can feel exists
mm-hmm.
because we don't
hang out all the time or talk all the time.
And even that's one of the reasons I got PUBG, was just to be able to
hang
out with him.
Yeah, I can relate to that with my friends on the west side when I moved over here. Just kind of grew that distance. But you feel like your relationship to your God is... I say your God just because people have different gods, but God is similar to a relationship with a human?
What I was getting at there is that it's hard to have a relationship with someone you can't see.
Oh, got it.
And I know it's possible because I have experienced it, but it's a lot of work. And it's something that I just slowly kind of stopped working at and working towards. And as it kind of went away, I decided, you know, I still hold that belief in that God and who he is, but it's not really at the forefront of my life right now. And I hold the belief that knowing what kind of God he is probably will come back to be more towards the forefront at some point. But right now it just isn't, and there's other things that I'm focusing on instead, for better or for worse. But that's just kind of where I'm at now, and kind of what's taking me is kind of struggling through this is because I haven't thought about it in a while.
Yeah.
Whereas this is normally something I would, you know, spend a lot of time thinking and writing about, because that's kind of one of the ways to help maintain that relationship, is really be introspective about it and
processing.
Yeah.
And you use writing as a way to process things.
Yeah, that is one of the things I found out about myself a couple of years ago, is that I process really well through writing. And even like when talking to God, that is how I prefer to do it, kind of just being able to write my thoughts down and listen.
So instead of praying, you write what you, your
yep.
dilemmas
yeah.
and stuff?
Yeah, I filled up a couple journals.
Wow.
Back in the day.
Nice. So something that's always kind of interested me is why is God in Christianity usually a masculine figure? Where did that come from? Like you say he.
Mm-hmm.
Why is...
Well, I mean, obviously the Bible is a big part of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And that itself is something that over the last couple of years and going to college and learning things, like
Yeah, you took a few religious classes, right?
I took one class about world religions. But it's... There was a quote that I found that, like, talked about how basically I believe that God is powerful enough that he can convey whatever he wants or needs to convey to someone through the Bible. He can bring them into relationship with him through that, help them be a better person, whatever. But I don't necessarily believe that every single part of the Bible and all of its bajillion translations are in and of themselves infallible. I believe that God uses what has been written down to speak to people today.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think that all of it is 100% true or accurate. But going back to kind of how that is pretty much the basis of Christianity, that's just kind of the way it was from the beginning. That was the only way I think it would have been accepted in the culture it was founded in. I don't think they would have...
He's a strong, powerful being. Is
I don't think they would have respected or worshipped a female deity like that. It just wasn't, it wasn't how their culture functioned. And I think that's always been that way, and a lot of people have just stuck with it. I mean, obviously there's a book and a movie called The Shack that kind of turns that tradition on its head by portraying God as a black woman.
Hmm.
And it's kind of funny, the controversy that popped up all around that.
As a result. I read that book. Who's that by?
I can't remember. I mean, it's pretty easy to find.
It's called The Shack.
Google The Shack. It's a movie now as well, although I haven't seen that.
Hmm.
It presents some interesting theological questions. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the main reason, is that it's the way it's always been, and it kind of, at least back in those days, was kind of how it had to be.
Hmm. That's really interesting, because in other religions that are equally as old or older or something, like, I'm going to say this without knowing exactly for certain, but Hinduism has female deities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so do other religions.
Mm-hmm.
So why were they able to, why were those cultures and those societies able to accept a female goddess or deity, and the Christian community in Europe was unable to?
I think the main difference is that as I don't know of a monotheistic faith that has a female deity. So there are plenty of polytheistic faiths where, yeah, they have
males and females.
Greek and Roman and Hindu.
Crazy,
they all have
five-headed stuff, yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of deities, and some of them are female because that played into their culture. I mean, you had almost always a goddess of fertility.
Yeah.
Whether it was sex or just fertile fields, because that was so much a part of their life.
Hmm.
But I don't think that any of those cultures would have accepted a female deity as the only one true, all-powerful, all-knowing God. Could be wrong in that, but that's kind of the difference I see. I mean, just looking at how long it's taken for women to have equal or almost equal rights as men.
Almost equal, yeah.
Like, I don't think those societies or cultures would have accepted that.
If Christianity were to hit, like, a massive reset, like, they just went, fuck all that, and just reset the entire religion, same basic principles, but they started it now, do you think there would be able to be one all-knowing, one all-powerful female goddess in today's society of beings?
In the hypothetical world, I don't know exactly how that would work, simply because so much of the core principles are based in the past, set in the past on history that has happened, past events that were created in that culture. But also the other side of that is, I mean, we use the masculine pronouns when talking and referring to God for the most case. But I don't think there are a whole lot of Christians who truly believe God is a male like you and me. I think for the most part they believe he is something totally other, and that we, male and female,
powerful,
are made in his image. So there is both male and female in his character, in his personality, in his being. And so I think that's, I can't remember exactly, it's been a while since I read the book, but kind of where the Shack is, or what it's getting at with their portrayal, is that God can take whatever form he wants. Like, if he wants to show up to you as a big black woman, because that's who you're going to identify with, or that's going to challenge you and grow you, I
think he'll totally do that if he needs to show up as a giant freaking spaghetti monster. Who knows?
Oh, yes.
He can do it.
Flying spaghetti monster.
Yeah, so... I wouldn't be surprised if in today's culture, with more or less we're moving towards, there would be more literature or theology that discusses or refers to God in the female sense.
All right, that's interesting.
Yeah. Just had to throw that big.
Yeah, just had to throw that FSM reference in. Yep. There. That's a fun book.
Oh yeah, I need to give it back to you.
Oh yeah, you still have that, huh? Yeah. Yeah. Recommended read, Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Mm-hmm.
And The Shack.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, this. So, as another hook for The Shack,
mm-hmm.
One of the other big questions it struggles with is there being evil in the world. So kind of the premise of it is this guy... is out camping with his family, and he has like 2 or 3 daughters and a son.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're out like camping by a lake, his youngest daughter is abducted.
Oh.
And
well, then.
They search for her, and they never find her, but they find an old shack in the woods with like her dress laying in it. And so, I mean. Don't know for sure what happened.
Sounds
but,
like a creepy fucking book.
I mean, yeah, you can speculate. And then it kind of jumps to years later. You get some mysterious letter in the mail that says, come meet me at the shack, I think. And it's signed Papa, which is what... I know, it sounds
this
creepy.
This is a really creepy book, dude.
That
just gave me
kind
goosebumps.
Of the circumstances regarding that letter. Papa is his, it's how he refers to God and his own personal relationship with him.
Okay.
He's already obviously struggling because he lost
his daughter,
daughter.
Yeah.
But then also stuff like no footprints leading up to the mailbox, and like, I think he slips and hits his head like beforehand, and just kind of weird stuff surrounding it. But then he eventually goes to the cabin and pretty much spends a couple days like in this trippy hang out with God as the Trinity. So there's like 3 of him, a Jesus and a spirit and kind of the father mother figure, I guess.
Cause in that
it,
yeah.
It definitely dives into that question of why, if you're good, how could you let my daughter be taken from me and die and all
yeah.
That terrible stuff. I wouldn't necessarily agree with all the answers it proposes,
mm-hmm.
but it's at least a good question to struggle with. It's presented well.
Yeah.
Another.
Dang.
Another good hook for a similar theme is the movie, well, and book I haven't read it yet, but the movie, especially Silence. It does a really good job of presenting all these really hard questions about evil and suffering in the world and gives you no answers.
Oh, great.
And
so it just makes you think?
It just makes you think.
I love movies like that.
Really hard about it. And it's brutal.
Yeah.
R-rated, so it's very realistic. It's about a couple Jesuit priests who go into Japan while it's kind of closed down and persecuting Christians.
Oh.
And it just... Yeah, it really dives into that why, but doesn't spoon-feed you or force-feed you a bunch
answers.
Of Christian answers.
It makes you develop your own
thoughts. Just lets you think about them in a admittedly Christian context, because Jesuits are a pretty orthodox faith,
mm-hmm.
a branch of faith. But yeah. And it's got Andrew Garfield and Liam Neeson.
Cool.
And
all right.
Driver. It's got a great cast too.
Cool. I don't know why I haven't heard of that.
Should watch
Silence. What year did it come out?
Like 2 or 3 years ago.
Hmm. Huh. You guys watched that in youth group, or?
No, I wanted to. I actually went and watched it in theaters with my mom. And then we watched it again after, I think.
wanted to do a theater and theology about it, but it was R-rated, so it was complicated with the politics of youth group.
Yeah. I don't think the little kids are like that.
Yeah.
So, what do you think happens after death? Just gonna jump into that.
I don't know.
I think a long time ago we had the conversation. Like, we were like 14, 15. And we were talking about... Well, you were telling me about heaven and hell and stuff. And
yeah, I was at the Met Hall at the...
Yeah, at the year. Yeah. Where everyone was sick. Or just Faith was.
Yeah, Faith was sick.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's something.
There's something there.
After death. I would definitely like to believe more or less in what the Bible says, and if you have a personal relationship with Christ and you've asked him or accepted him as your savior to cover your sins, then there's something awesome waiting for you.
Yeah.
And the flip side of that is if you haven't, you're fucked.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, that definitely raises lots more questions than it answers. It's a complicated question that you won't know the answer to until you're dead.
Yeah. You ever consider the thought that maybe what you are living right now is purgatory or hell or heaven or like a mix of all three, and the people that have it really bad in this world, that this is their hell, and the people that are doing really great, having a great life here, they're in heaven?
I haven't really thought about
that. And everybody that's just a shitty in between is...
I would kind of fit with...
right there in purgatory.
Karma and rebirth.
Yeah.
This would be a few... Well, yeah, because, I mean, with that postulation, you would have to have that there was some kind of previous life before the one you're living now. So whether that was on an earth like this or in some other realm or plane, whatever, but it could be... Yeah, you did something bad in that life. Now you're screwed in this life. But I don't really like the
rebirth, reincarnation.
I don't like the excuse of I did something bad in a past life, so now my life is shitty now, and I just have to deal with it, or do something better now so that I can get a better life next time, or whatever.
Yeah.
I think you just play with the hand of cards you're dealt and make the most out of it.
Do what you can, obviously, what you have.
Obviously not everybody gets an equal starting hand, but
yeah, that's
the world we live in.
Very accurate.
Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah. Well, there's I heard something somewhere. Shit, I can't remember where. It was somebody having kind of that speculation that I just said,
yes.
Heaven, hell, and purgatory all here on Earth, and psychedelics, LSD, whatever, DMT, are allowing us to see into our previous life or into, like... the realm of reality. Like, this isn't reality, and we're in purgatory or hell or heaven.
Interesting. So then how do you explain when somebody has a shitty life and then is able to better themselves and suddenly their life becomes much better? Or somebody who's living in a really, say, poor situation or environment but is way the fuck happier than somebody with a bajillion dollars? This is actually living a more fulfilling life.
Yeah, it's, I honestly don't know.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought, though. Maybe we're just in the Matrix.
Yeah. God,
I said that's fucking cool. One of my favorite podcasts is Rhett and Link's Ear Biscuits.
Uh-huh.
And in one of them, they talked about the possibility of being in the Matrix.
Yeah.
And Link was talking about how, like, he actually was just, like, sitting in the hot tub one day. He's like, what if this is the Matrix? What if you just have to, like, the way to escape the simulation is by admitting that you're in the simulation? He's like...
He's just screaming, I'm in the simulation!
Like, I am in the simulation, take me home now, or whatever. And then they both, like, do it on the podcast. Just like, okay, we're going to break out of the simulation. And then it happens. It's just really funny.
That's hilarious. That sounds like those things where people are like, alright, if I ever invent time travel, I'm coming back to, like, 5 seconds from now and doing this. And then they just sit there, and they're like, ah, oh, damn it. Yes. I guess that's never happening.
Yep.
That's awesome. Alright, well, I'm gonna wrap that up for today.
Sounds good.
Thank you for coming out here to this.
Some deep questions.
Yeah, not a lot of questions, like, conclusively answered, but I feel like it was a fun...
Good luck with that.
Yeah, you can never reach a conclusion for those. It's a...
You can reach your own conclusion, but...
Your own personal conclusion, but there's never one absolute truth that applies to everyone, I don't think.
That's why I don't like arguing with people.
Yeah.
And I don't like people who argue conclusively. They're like, this is the right thing.
This is the way, yeah.
It's like... I don't but know. Debating is there's fun. A lot of shit that I don't know. Yeah. So, like, I'll debate if I know.
If you know, but like
enough about the topic to feel comfortable presenting things. But it's like
there's a lot of shit we don't know.
Yeah.
And we'll never know. That's scary to think about.
Not really.
Scares the shit out of me.
You don't know it.
No.
It'll either hurt you or it won't.
Damn, dude. All right, well, thank you, and thank you for tuning in for today. Have a wonderful morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever the hell you're at in the world. That was another episode of the Forest Walker Podcast. Bye. Yeah, but I have no idea why the fuck I put that copy.